Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all of the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a totally new way.
I'm David Lee.
And I'm Mac Antigua. We're 223. We're 223.
Highest
We're 223.
Position ever. How's it feel? How's it feel to be at what is essentially number one for us, right?
I just want to take a micro moment, a meta moment, to just observe that the first thing I wanted to share with people is that we moved to 223. So that sort of speaks to my priorities of why we do this podcast.
We broke through.
There's some sort of deep-seated insecurity that I'm trying to project out by doing this project, apparently.
We broke through the ceiling of 250 to 233. That's incredible, right?
Thanks to 223 or 233?
I'm sorry, it's 223. No, it's 223, 223.
223. Yeah. So thanks to our last two episodes for being awesome. And thanks for the listeners for goosing the numbers.
Yeah, that's again, I think it proves the theory, right? When we have incredibly interesting people like Mariah Crocker talk about interesting things, people
want Buckley the week before.
Pat Buckley the week before. That's right.
And this week we got Jan coming up, really interesting stuff. I also want to make a commitment to our listeners. We're going to keep grinding. We want to be like that band that tours in a van up and down the East Coast, right? We don't want to just get on top of the pops with our hot single and then fade out.
Right.
We're going to grind for another 5 years in obscurity. And then we're going to break. So that's our commitment to you, the listener. We're not going to go Hollywood overnight. We're in the seventh week, David, of the quarantine. And are there any things that you've observed, new trends, ways our culture is starting to act that you are enjoying?
I've really, really enjoyed sort of reflecting a little bit about Mariah Crocker's podcast from last week. I've begun to look around a little bit more on my walks with Molly, my three daily walks with Molly. Mm-hmm. And I've really, really enjoyed the chalk drawings and the signs that people have put on their windows, just celebrating this desire to be together, celebrating a sense of even like distant social connection or physically distant social connection. Mm-hmm. There's just been some incredible chalk drawings in my neighborhood. And then today, this morning, as we were walking, saw a sign on a house that said, this beautifully drawn sign, right, that said, "We hope you enjoy your walk," on somebody's front door, which was just so lovely, right? It just really felt like people are still trying to reach out and take care of each other, in this sort of physically distant way. How about you?
Yeah, I'm just building off that last thought of even though we're distant physically, I think people, I see neighbors, I see just folks in Milwaukee are trying to connect with each other. In ways, be it through more really cool live streams like the N43 concert that helped raise money for the fund, or seeing folks like the Milwaukee Chamber Theater do some really neat programming virtually. I think it's trying to overcome the necessary physical distances that we have to hold, but we're actually I think we're actually closer or wanting to be closer than we before. So that's what keeps me sane. Because there's a lot to make you insane, right? There's a lot out there to make you insane. I think those are also other interesting trends or things that I'm enjoying. Also include, I think the notion of just seeing the creativity and innovation that's just happening with, the necessity, like just seeing places like Colectivo turn into like grocery stores or restaurants, finding new ways to stay open. I know it's sort of like that's survival, obviously, but it just speaks to always the creativity that's always been there, innovation that's been there, and the relentless, not taking this lying down. Seeing Tandem become one of the world kitchen, the Jose Andres' community kitchens, for example, right? Like, and again, folks are going to fail, or when I say folks are failing, business will fail, right? I know not everything's going to survive, but I really am appreciative and seeing just the innovation and creativity, right? That just reminds me, what am I doing to like stay on top of things or stay in it, right? Like it's just really cool to see.
That's a really a great preview for our guest who's coming up in just a couple minutes. But before we get to Jan, I just wanted to give everybody like a quick update on where we are with the two priority things that we're working on as it relates to COVID-19 and our response. The first thing is our policy response and what's going on right now, right? So very quickly, I think many people know that CARES 2 Electric Boogaloo was signed into law on Friday or Saturday, which funds the second phase of the Paycheck Protection Program that's happening, that's being administered through the Small Business Administration, and then also funds some more hospital medical response. So if you have an SBA Paycheck Protection Program loan in the queue, make sure you call your bank to make sure that you're back in the wait list or the queue list for this next tranche of money that's coming through. And then the second thing is that we have an active op-ed letter for arts organizations, CEOs to sign on to ensure that that arts and culture funding is included in upcoming relief and recovery legislation at the state and local level. So, and then also we have a similar letter for board chairs of arts and culture organizations to sign on to that will go to our elected officials. So if you are interested in getting your organization or your board chair or for you to sign on, make sure you come to our website, to our Arts Action Center to get on that letter, because we're going to be moving that out in the next week or two. So make sure you come to our website, get on that letter, because it's super important. This is the moment now where people are, where our legislators are making decisions, right? So we really need to begin to raise awareness of the incredible scale and impact of our arts organizations, arts and culture organizations in our city, and why our sector deserves to be included in upcoming relief and recovery bills. Hey, Mac, you want to talk about where we are with the Milwaukee Artist Relief Fund? 7 weeks in?
7 weeks in, and we're heading into our final week, looking to celebrate what has been a pretty amazing campaign, which started on March 13th, targeting $50,000 to be distributed to 100 artists by April 10th. As of April 23rd, we've distributed 321 relief requests. We've fulfilled 321 relief requests for $145,919.
That's incredible.
So almost triple what we thought. And we're a little bit over time, and we got one more week to go, which means we've got 102 approvals to fulfill at $46,625. That's if we, you know, that's all in. If we can pull it off by Friday, that's the goal.
So basically, all we have to get is what, like $5,000 gifts?
Yes. Right? Yes. And I know our
$5,000 gifts.
I know our listening group right now, if you go to imaginemk.org, click on Artist Relief Fund, you all will do it this week. You totally will do it this week and become heroes. Again, if I want to be totally authentic, we're pretty much saying we're going to start over because we started at 50,000 as a quest on March 13th in 4 weeks. And we're just saying, yeah, let's get another 50,000 in 4 days, which is tough. It's tough for me to get my imagination around it. It could be possible. But you know, we're also bracing that we won't be able to make it. And that's just the reality when we went way beyond what we originally thought we could. So we're hoping to find other ways to support those artists on the wait list. But the reality is it's been a lot to keep fundraising. It's been a lot to keep the communications and trying to get people to fundraise. It's really hard to sustain. And so we had to set May 1st, April 30th, May 1st is our sort of end date for that. So that's where we're at with that.
So while we are still relentlessly working to fulfill as many requests as we can of that remaining 100 or so artists in our wait list, artists and creatives in our wait list, we are also beginning to build new resources for our network to either get help or gain access to help. So this is sort of a parallel strategy, right? We're still yep. trying to fulfill the folks in the wait list or find ways to off ramp them into other funds, right? Because there have been other funds that have been stood up.
Yep.
And we're also trying to provide other more higher touch resources for folks to get help. And today's podcast really is sort of the first down payment in what that higher touch resource might be.
Yeah.
Our guest today is Jan Pierce, who is a small business lawyer in Bayview who counts many of our city's artists and creative entrepreneurs as clients. And he's going to join us to talk a little bit about how artists, creatives, and nonprofit small businesses can really begin to orient themselves in this time of uncertainty. And I think Mac will agree that the conversation we had with him was, I think like a little bit of tough love, a little bit of, you know, get up and just get after it, right? Like if you need to be able to, if you only can control what's within your span of control, that this is what you got to do every day. I think he's going to provide some really interesting nuggets for folks listening. And just one last tidbit. His law practice also happens to have some of the best t-shirts in the law practice game. So Jan will be joining us after the break, and we hope you will stay tuned.
It turned out we finally found the key, but no, they're not letting us in. It turned out we finally found the cure, but no, it's not medicine.
Welcome, Jan. Welcome to the pod. How are you?
I'm excellent. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Milwaukee, and this is my first podcast. I can't tell you how excited I am.
Oh, man. Years from now, they're going to commemorate a stamp. Well, I'll say we were there. It'll be like the first Sex Pistols concert, like 30,000 people. Like, I listened to that pod when Jan was there. And it only actually had 100 people that was in the room, but we appreciate you breaking the duck with us.
Yeah, and just as full disclosure, Jan and I serve on a board together. So we've known each other for the last many years, actually, at this point. And in that board service, I've gotten to know Jan's expertise as a lawyer and as a sort of practical advice giver in very, very close ways. And also in full disclosure, he's also helped us with some legal issues as well. So we're super excited to have you on to provide some insight, right, as to how our group of artists and also arts organizations, small nonprofits, can make sure they insulate themselves from as much risk as possible in this moment. So Jan, just as sort of a little bit of an opener, I know you and Mac also practice a little bit of CrossFit, and I've always found that CrossFit sort of prepares me for it, sort of mentally, for like difficult physical challenges. And this is sort of a difficult physical and emotional challenge that's happening right now with COVID-19, right? Have you found that your CrossFit practice has sort of like gotten you ready for whatever madness this is?
Well, it's interesting. There's a friend of mine who also happens to be a lawyer and who started CrossFit a couple of years after I did. Mm. He used to make fun of me, said I was in a cult, you know, all the usual sort of.
Oh, thing. Yes.
And then he got hooked himself, right? And it was sort of game changing. He started eating better. He was fitting into his clothes better.
Wow.
He happens to be a criminal lawyer, and he would go to the jails and not feel afraid anymore. And in the last 6 or 8 months, we've developed a term that we call a phrase called the unified theory of CrossFit. And it's sort of an entire world encompassing view that all boils down to sort of being hard to kill, you know, mentally, physically tough. And yes, it absolutely does, I think, come back in this moment. So.
Yeah, I'm actually fresh off of one. I did one in my backyard just to prep for our interview today, Jan, because I heard you can bring it. So,
yeah, I confess, I should be able to do all these really neat backyard and at home workouts, and I sort of know how to do it, but it is hard. A real gym with real barbells is a real benefit. So.
Well, you know, the thing about it, Jan, like when I think about working out, like in a tough wad, right? It's there's a place of despair one gets to, but then you have to decide, all right, I'm gonna move forward in this moment. I can either be in despair, or I can do the next rep the best I can, or I can stay focused. And can you talk about, you know, this is the segue. Here's my sweet segue. How do independent artists and small nonprofits and creative businesses have that moment, right, as they're in the moment of despair in terms of this pandemic and economic?
Well, you know, let's step back one step further from the crisis. And, you know, let me just say that I've been practicing law for 20 years now. Eight of that has been last year's on my own, working with entrepreneurs and artist entrepreneurs. And one of the things that I have found is that aside from all the brilliant legal advice I give, it is brilliant, is what I would call life coaching, right? Is people come to being an artist or an artist entrepreneur with this idea that they're just going to start and it's going to happen and it's going to go exactly like they planned. And most of the time they find out that they're working 24/7, that they're not making any money, that nothing's going as planned. And even if they are going to be successful, everything seems to be train wrecking for a period of time. And so one of the little speeches that I give people early on is you have to commit to not giving up. You know, you basically have to understand that you're diving into the deep end of the pool, and you have to, that failure is not an option, right? That you will ultimately get to the end of the line, but it's gonna require getting up every single day, even though you don't want to, and doing what needs to be done to get through the day and then the week, and sort of a one day at a time attitude. And then my segue into our current pandemic related crisis would be that I think that's even more important now. And just to sort of add some context, you know, I've thought about this a lot, and I've found myself getting a little bit depressed or angry, off and on, vacillating between, you know, being stuck in a house, not talking to anybody except my dogs and myself, wondering about the future, a sense of uncertainty, and then anger that a perfectly good economy seems to be just coming apart at the seams, and knowing, you know, that it's not going to be good on the other side. And I think that, I mean, in my practice, I know lots of folks who make up our, you know, the cultural community, the business community, and they're restaurant owners, they're, you know, creative types, and these people live hand to mouth, day to day. And, if, you know, basically what happened in this crisis is that somebody just flipped the switch off, you know, and it can be almost as devastating as a death in the family or unemployment, but it's not something that you ease into, right? It's not like you bring up your credit cards over 2 years and things don't turn out like you want, or you're in a bad relationship. This is something where, you know, everything's fine and then it's not, the bottom drops out of you and out of your life, and you have all the bills and debts and obligations that you normally have, except none of the income potentially that you had. And I think that's psychologically devastating, to have the sense of despair, to know that you don't have the money, or even if you still are marginally employed, to know that there's a sense of uncertainty that you may be the next person who's unemployed, or there may be funding that turns off. So go ahead. I think maybe I'm running off the mouth here, but
no, I just want to make sure, like, I think that's a really fascinating point. Like, you, Jan, you work with folks who are already committing, right, to do this work. You've got to commit to being in it full, right? Despite the odds, if you're a restaurant owner, you know, the math is not good for you to stay open in non-pandemic times, right? So that's a mindset people got to have, and they got to be brave. You layer on top this thing that has now taken away their ability to even get to that mindset, And that's right. Doubly difficult because not only has now the world changed for them, those bills are still coming in. Those vendors are still coming to go, hey, where's my rent or where's my rental fees for these things? And now what? And that sounds like what you're echoing right now. Like that's what a lot of people are facing right now.
And they're dealing. Right. And I think that, you know, the business owners, you know, for all their hard work and successful mental toughness in the past, they know one thing for sure now. It's like, it is over. You know, it probably, there's just, probably no way they're going to survive. You know, if they're lucky enough to have a couple of months worth of money, cash flow in the bank, maybe they've got some of the PPP loans, some assistance, but there's a really good chance they're going to be toast. Now, there's also a group of folks who may be marginally employed, who don't mind being unemployed for a short period of time. But the problem is, and this is where some of the stress can come in, and it's something that I've been thinking through as well, is when this first started, if someone says, hey, can you hang on for a month and just chill out, stay at home, can you make it on your savings and then maybe your credit cards or something like that, or some odd jobs for a month? And maybe a lot of folks say, yeah, I can kind of string it out. But if it starts to go much longer than that, or if you're even psychologically thinking what happens if it doesn't come back to normal, then you need to start dealing with that. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about today is the importance of planning ahead, right? I always think back to a piece of advice that I got when I was 17 years old, 17 or 18 years old, and from a high school anatomy and physiology teacher, believe it or not. And some kid asked him, hey, you know, what should I major in college or something like that? What should I do after high school? And this teacher had said, you know, life is like a hallway with a series of doors. And your job right now should be to keep as many of those doors open as possible for as long as you can, because as you go on in life, necessarily you're going to shut those doors. And so try to do the best you can to keep those doors open. And that's, I think, the way you want to approach a loss of income or a potential loss of income. And that is, plan for this thing going on for longer than you expect. Don't plan on, you know, using your credit cards or, God forbid, payday loans or retirement accounts to get through this month, and then you find out in a month it doesn't end and you've used up a bunch of things that you, or done a bunch of things that you probably shouldn't do.
Right. So diving in a little bit deeper, right? I mean, I think some of the most recent statistics show that like 70% of folks who classify themselves as artists and creatives are unemployed right now. Almost 50% of national arts groups believe that they're not going to make it through this pandemic. I think the actual number is 44% based on the most recent survey. So given the incredible scale, right, of potential dislocation, of a current dislocation, then potential dislocation down the line, I mean, what are some things that people and organizations ought to do today if they haven't already, right, to keep some of those doors open?
So I know we talked about not hitting bankruptcy too much. You and I touched base briefly, but I just want to frame the bankruptcy option briefly here as something that's always in the background, right? That bankruptcy is there if things get really bad, right? If all of a sudden your life train wrecks and all your bills come together and there's no way out and everything starts collapsing, bankruptcy is always available to fresh start. And so, even though all of us want to avoid bankruptcy and probably aren't going to file bankruptcy, some of the way I approach things, both from a strategic point of view and from a negotiating point of view, is to remember that bankruptcy is always there and an option. And without getting too far into the weeds, and it's to repeat something I just mentioned to Matt, there are certain things that you, but you should assume that this is going to go on for a period of time, right? You know, artists have the benefit of knowing that they're probably the first to go, right? Everybody else thinks they're essential and that they're going to get rehired. Artists probably have been living with the fact that they're lucky to have employment when they do have it, or nonprofits who are, you know, struggling, you know, just there by the grace of God, go I, you know. And so don't do things like run up your credit card. You know, don't put yourself in a more precarious position than you are already. Absolutely don't ever take out a payday loan. These things are the worst possible device ever created by man. It's almost 600% annual interest rate on it. If you take one out, people generally take one out and another one out, and then basically it's impossible to pay off ever. So don't do that. Don't ever take out your retirement funds. And don't transfer items out of your name. These are basically bankruptcy-related things. Don't think, hey, I've got this great fully paid off condo that I own. I better get it out of my name or else creditors will want it. Don't go transferring things out of your name. These are what they call fraudulent conveyances. So just tighten down the hatches. I think you need to try and plan on alternate forms of income. One of the things that, just because I'm kind of a cynical guy and I don't have a lot of faith in government, you know, when this first happened, you know, we got a lot of news about all these wonderful government programs that were going to come out and everything was going to be okay. We're just going to stop working. And then, you know, it was going to be all this money that came in. And sure enough, it's not happening. So I think that people need to come to grips with the fact that there's probably no sustaining money coming from government. And you really need to start planning on different ways to make it. And frankly, planning on getting some sort of alternate employment other than as an artist. And I, you know, I'm a little bit of a loss because I'm not an artist and I don't know how artists think, but I know a lot of artists do anything they need to kind of make ends meet, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm an artist, but I wait tables, you know, drink mm-hmm. pay bills. And I think that you have to sort of plan on this going for a period of time. And then to kind of jump back to the unified theory of CrossFit that Mac and I were talking about earlier, one of the things, and I'd like to consider myself a fairly resilient, tough guy, but I have found myself in the grips of sometimes some soul-crushing and psychologically, you know, destabilizing thinking about the current situation. Because on one hand, you have massive bloodshed, right? There's just economic bloodshed everywhere. Small businesses going under, property owners who aren't getting paid. I had a client call me up the other day, said he just received notice from a national tenant and that they just decided to stop paying rent to the tune of $24,000 a month. And so we're going to start seeing a cascading series of dominoes that are crashing down. So on one hand, there's economic bloodshed and disaster everywhere. The other level is this fear of the virus, right? The actual real fear that we might get sick. And then on the other hand, there's this other layer of sort of white collar workers, knowledge workers, public employees who either are working or not working, but they're still receiving a paycheck and life is going on as normal, right? And it's this kind of this veneer of don't worry, everything's fine, especially as things start to reopen. But for a lot of folks, and I think artists and entrepreneurs are going to be part of this, things aren't going to return, right? Even when things start up again.
And that's one thing we're just beginning to grapple with, right? Is this idea that, you know, at some point the state is going to reopen, whether it's in 2 weeks or 4 weeks, but very likely, even when that happens, large scale convenings will likely either be a part of that plan or not. And even if it is a part of that plan, my guess that people aren't going to be super excited about being in an inside space with hundreds and hundreds of people doing things together, right? Or touching things at a museum or like engaging with each other. And that is, I think, just something that we're beginning to put some thought behind. Because, you know, just because things open, right, whether you're a restaurant or a museum or a dance company, doesn't mean that people want to come back, right? Because of the fear of the virus.
So to finish up my thought here about this sort of proper frame of mind to sort of continue on and maybe get back to this mental toughness is that even though you're unemployed, right, treat getting through this like a job, okay? I think that what you need to do is get up, you know, and on the first week or so, you know, after you've dealt with this, sit down and write a list of all your obligations, right? Rent, credit card bills, student loans, mortgage, all those kind of things, and then have a plan to pay for it. Sit down, and this sounds incredibly basic, but I mean, I've been doing this a long time. I earlier on in my career, I did bankruptcy work for a couple of years, and I worked with hundreds and hundreds of people whose lives have sort of come apart. And what happens is this sense of despair causes you to just, you know, it's like what I call the ostrich condition, right? Where you just bury your head in the sand and you just say, this is all horrible. I know I can't get through it. So you just ignore everything. And what you need to do is exactly the opposite. And believe it or not, you can beat this thing, right? You write down what you owe, who you owe it to. You sort of do a little bit of triage. What has to be done first, right? I think that if you own a home, you need to think about making your mortgage payment a priority, because as soon as you get behind on your mortgage, there's a very good chance that without filing Chapter 13 bankruptcy when things end, that you'll ever be able to get that on track. And that's not an option that you want to do, because it means sort of putting your life in bankruptcy for 3 to 5 years just to save the home. So focus on getting your mortgage payment. Student loans, the government, I think, has instituted, if you're if you've got student loans from the government, they've done an automatic 6-month forbearance. Credit card companies, call them up. Generally, credit card companies are terrible to work with unless you default. But we have sort of a unique moment in time here, which is, it's not like the dog ate my homework. This is... Did you hear? We're in a world pandemic, so everybody everywhere knows that the bottom has dropped out and that it's terrible, right? So to some extent, we're in a better position than you normally would be if you just lost your job or a spouse got killed, is your creditors already understand the impact of this and to some extent are going to be working with you. So organize a list of who you owe, talk to your creditors, tell each one. I know a lot of these companies are so busy that they're not even answering their phones. Fine, send them an email, right? They're opening up online communication tools, and literally get up every single day and check something off your list, right? Because the one thing you know for sure is you don't have enough money to pay these folks. Or if you have enough money to pay them, you're going to be out of money in a month from now. And so treat your life like a job, you know, work through this stuff, figure out which things need to be paid, and then start working out negotiating tools with other creditors. I want to jump back to bankruptcy just a bit, because I referred to it earlier as a negotiating tool. And I think back to another teacher, law school professor, when he was trying to explain bankruptcy. He said, look, bankruptcy is like the guy who's sitting in the window, right? And the bad guys, the creditors, are coming through the door, and they're all going after the guy sitting in the window. And the guy in the window says, hey, stay away or I'm going to jump, right? So bankruptcy is jumping out the window. And this is one of those events in the world where everybody knows that everything is horrible. And if someone says, my life is horrible, I'm out of work and I can't pay anything, and if you push too hard, I'm going to have to file bankruptcy, you know what? Creditors are probably going to believe you. And there's that. So you're sitting in the window. You don't want to jump because, you know, probably don't want to, either you don't want to file bankruptcy or you want to save it for something horrible, like when you get divorced in the future. Keep that in mind when you're talking to your creditors. Say, look, this is an overwhelming situation. It's out of my control. I expect it to end. Is there is there something that we can do where I give you, you know, certain types of minimum payments, or can we do a forbearance plan where things don't start for 6 months? I think people are going to find that the creditors are willing to work with you. So that's I mean, it sounds like simple advice, but I have, fortunately or unfortunately, have about 1,500 Facebook friends, and I've just been polling sort of the reactions of people out there. And I think there's a lot of folks who've expressed frustration getting unemployment. Again, the government said, hey, don't worry, we're going to beef up your unemployment. We're going to even make it better than it was before. You're going to get all this money. It's going to be just like working, except you're not working. There's going to be PPP loans for your employer. They're going to pay you. You know what? Nothing is working like it's supposed to. And so you're probably going to be out of money for a period of time, even if you had some hope of getting unemployment. So,
I mean, it really sounds like the key right tactic really is to be proactive about the current situation, right? Don't hide from it, but actually attack it as you would any other practice, right? Like the current situation in your life. Are there any other key negotiation tactics or strategies that you think folks really ought to begin to think about or employ when things start to get really hairy? I mean, outside of that we can still jump out the window, right? Bankruptcy.
Right. So you kind of reminded me of something else I wanted to point to on this. And the value of being proactive, right, is, for instance, that credit card debt or that medical bill. You know, it's still going to be there whether you deal with it or not. But one of the things that can happen is if you don't deal with it on a proactive basis is that creditor may go to a law firm, may start a lawsuit, may get a judgment against you. And once there's a judgment, once somebody has gone to court and received a judgment, that takes a mere unsecured debt and turns it into something that actually becomes a lien on personal property and real estate in the county, and creditors can use that to come after you. And it's harder to get rid of in bankruptcy. I mean, you can still get rid of the debt, but there's other issues. So obligations can change in their nature. They can become harder to deal with, and so the goal is to keep things. In conversation with creditors. One of the things that I found in the past is calling a credit card company and telling them, hey, you know, can we just work on my interest rate? It's gotten out of hand. It's gone from my teaser rate to something that's like 28%. Credit card companies tend to be pretty ruthless. They basically say, no, screw you. If you finally default, and then you tell them they're going to file bankruptcy, all of a sudden they're willing to work with you, right? But now I think you may be in an opportunity to be a little bit more proactive with them. Medical bills, something that I've noticed, you know, I'm getting older now. Maybe 15, 20 years ago, clinics, hospitals used to just bug you about these things for months, right? They would call you up and ask you and harass you to pay your bill. Now you've got about 30 days, and these places wash their hands of those, and they send them to like national nameless collection agencies, and they get much harder to deal with. So to the extent that you can actually work with someone locally quickly, that's a good plan. And I'm sorry, I think you had said other strategies before I rambled out there.
Well, other strategies, or as well as you'd sent us an awesome link, set of links. Right, which we'll post in addition to the recording here. But are there any other government programs or orgs that people should know about in addition to the strategies, right? Like maybe stuff they're overseeing or
so
hiding in plain sight.
I'm pretty clear that I'm pretty cynical about my expectations of government programs. Sure. I think that at the very least, you know, I would encourage people to file unemployment and follow through, but don't expect it to end soon. There are some organizations that I think are really helpful in Milwaukee County. The Milwaukee Justice Center, and that's one of the links I have, is really an extraordinary nonprofit that is housed in the basement of the courthouse. It's full disclosure, run by a lawyer, a friend of mine who has done a magnificent job, and she's now got other lawyers and volunteer lawyers and volunteer law students that are filling this gap between, you know, people just, people don't have a legal right to things like divorce counsel, creditor counsel, and landlord-tenant counsel. And the Milwaukee Justice Center will give really good DIY help, volunteer help, information at the website itself. They've got really excellent choose-your-own-adventure path to just working through stuff online. Like if something's happening, you know, with your landlord or a creditor or a spouse, where to go, what your options are. It's a really good outline to kind of plan the kind of options you have. One non-bankruptcy program that I'd like people to be aware of, because it's kind of, nobody ever talks about it, but it's a really interesting program. It's called Chapter 128. It's under Wisconsin law, under Chapter 128. It's not bankruptcy, although we call it Chapter 128. It sounds kind of like Chapter 7, Chapter 13, worlds apart. It's called amortization of debt, and it's for unsecured debts only. So for, it doesn't work on car loans, it doesn't work on home loans, but things like medical bills, vendor bills, credit card bills, if you end up with a mountain of this stuff over time, and you don't want to file bankruptcy, but maybe it's just too much to pay off at once,
sure,
you can file this. It's super cheap to file. You need a lawyer to help you. But what it does is it takes all of your unsecured debt and it amortizes it over 36 months, and it takes the zero and reduces it to zero. It acts as a stay against creditors. So all these people who are calling you up on the phone, threatening to sue you, all has to stop. And it's got the power of Wisconsin law behind it, a judge that says, all you creditors got to stop. Right. And this guy is trying to get back on track. We're going to give him 3 years to do it. And then there's a trustee appointed by the court to actually pay your debts for you. So once we get through this, for let's say 6 or 8 months down the road, you get a job again, usually they'll do it with a paycheck deduction. They'll take one, like it's a garnishment, but it's a voluntary garnishment. And that money comes out of your check, it goes to this trustee, and they pay your creditors. Maybe it's 10 or 20 of these creditors, and they all get paid. They don't get paid any interest. The trustee takes a small fee to do it, but it gives you a breathing space, right? You're not fighting all these lawsuits. And, a $1,000 debt collector who's suing you in Milwaukee County Court can be just as much effort and psychological, it takes just as much effort as a $10,000 or $20,000 bill. So what's nice is you can, schedule the stuff to be paid over time. And I think it's perfect for a time like this when a lot of folks are probably going to be able to find something once they get back online. It's not just bankruptcy or, struggling to wonder. So, and then with that, just a reminder that this will end, right? It's not going to end as quickly as we want. Even if they quote turn things on again, there's going to be a period of dystopian like defaults on businesses and all over the place. It's not going to be easy, right? But you will get back on your feet, if you don't kill yourself, and you'll get things back on track. And this Chapter 128 can actually take back that debt that you couldn't pay and help you pay it off over time.
No hesitation when you're telling the truth.
I don't know if you know this, Dan, but one of the great powers we have on the show is we make our guests the arts and culture czar in Milwaukee. Problem, though, is that any proclamation that you make right now will only last for about 2 minutes. So to the extent that you're ready and willing, we are going to make you the arts and culture czar right now. But again, only 2 minutes long, that whatever you proclaim will be in power.
If I was the arts and culture czar, right, I would occupy a position that would be sort of like one of these inspector generals that you hear about in the federal investigations, a watchdog, somebody who polices local government, but who doesn't get caught up and who isn't accountable to local government, and whose job it was to do nothing but knock down barriers of entry for entrepreneurs and business people. One of the things, and this is coming from my view as somebody who works with entrepreneurs in this city, and also somebody who comes into, came to Milwaukee from elsewhere, is this is a great city to be a small business or an artist in. And its size, the fact that it's not too huge, allows people to network quickly and find different groups that they can collaborate with and bounce things off of each other. And it allows people to start businesses for cheap, next to nothing, right? You never hear about mom and pop restaurants and breweries and stuff starting up in some of these bigger metros simply because the real estate is too expensive. So here, the cost of real estate is so low that you end up seeing mom and pops jump in. And the reason I bring in business, even though this is an art show, is that what I have seen in this town is that the mom and pop type businesses, and I mean restaurants and clubs and breweries, it's inextricably linked to the arts and cultural life in this city. And they provide the spaces, the venues, the marketing, the emotional support for arts, whether they be musicians or graphic artists, performance artists. And I just think that's something really special about Milwaukee. And I have, for all the barriers of entry that are lower in Milwaukee, the one thing that remains to be difficult is the city of Milwaukee. And it is, you know, very difficult to get through the red tape to open up a space. And everybody always misunderstands how long it's going to take. And I think most of the people who work at the city don't have necessarily the right attitude to breaking down those barriers. They have a very, this is my job, and you haven't filled out the right paperwork, so go back to the back of the line. And I think if I was a cultural czar or somebody had that position for longer than 2 minutes, to actually break down those barriers, to make it easier for artists and entrepreneurs to sort of break down the red tape barriers. Because a lot of times, time is money, right? People have budgeted the amount of money to launch their product or their business or their space. And when they find out that it's actually not going to take a month, that it's going to take 3 or 4 months, they could be out of business before they've ever had a chance to open the door. So I would focus on making the red tape process of the city of Milwaukee a little more customer friendly.
You know, and Jan, I think that's, I appreciate you lifting up to the surface something that might be hiding in plain sight, is this notion of the more vibrant, right, the small business is, that goes arm in arm with the vibrancy of independent artists, right? Right. And because to what you're saying, these both have such a connection to place and neighborhood that it's a win-win.
Right.
These are not places that are centered in like Bentonville, Arkansas, to name any companies, right? Or Redmond, Washington, right? This is the small business wants local places to thrive. Artists wants local places to thrive. So they're going to be naturally intertwined. And to you, what you're saying is the more you can make it rapid for businesses to start up and get going, that's actually going to create, foster more of an environment for arts and culture to happen. Right. And that's something I think that's hiding in plain sight in a lot of ways.
There's all this, I think that's why you see so much Milwaukee pride. People, Milwaukee pride about businesses, right? And but it's like they get it, right? This is our cool culture. It's our friends, our neighbors. We got it going on. And it happens, like I find in my neighborhood, a lot of the great things that are happening happen on their own, not because of government, right? But sometimes our elected officials like to think that they're really important and somehow put themselves in between, a neighborhood or city project just to say that they made it happen. And frankly, I think they'd be doing a lot better work if they just helped government get out of the way sometimes. So.
Well, speaking of got it going on, Janet, we appreciate you getting it going on to make sure that our small businesses and independent artists thrive. How else can they find you, perhaps in search of either life coaching, legal work, or wanting to do a WOD with you in the backyard? Where can they find you?
What kind of mood I'm in, right? So my website is janpiercelaw.com, janpiercelaw.com. Everything you need is there. If there's anything that anybody ever has a question about or wants to bounce off me, I've always done free consultations for, you know, 30 to 40 minutes. And you can have me free for at least 30 or 40 minutes. And I've found that over time, you know, people can learn a lot. I can give somebody 20 or 30 minutes knowledge and it'll save them 6 months on the internet. So don't make it harder than it has to be. Feel free to give me a call or drop me an email.
As long as they can handle your tough love, Jen, that's all I'm hearing. They got to be able to handle the, they got to handle the straight shooting. That's over here.
I'm doing it out of love. I raise my voice. It's just because it's a tough world out there, whether it's a small business or as an artist. And I think that, you know, nobody's coming to save us, right? It's up to us. And that's the bottom line. So, everything we can do to get across the finish line, you know, it's worth it.
That was great. It's always great to have a fellow CrossFitter on. It's a sub pod of the pod, which is
the sub pod wad of the pod.
Sub pod wad of the pod. But all seriousness, I mean, I think as I listen to Jan, you know, this guy's worked with hundreds upon hundreds of people and businesses, right? Getting them back to what they need to be doing, right? The thing that I'm struck by the most is this need to manage what you can manage, right? And I think he had shared with me offline, the definition of stress is worrying about stuff you have no control over, right? And it's true. Like when he said that, that really resonated with me, right? Because whenever I feel stressed out, I try to do a quick check of like, can I do anything about it in this moment right now? And if I can't, I got to let it go because I don't get credit for worrying about stuff. You know, worrying about stuff without action behind it, you don't get credit for that, right? And so I think that's what he's saying is that like, well, what can you do? Mark it down, you know, make it real, and then start taking action on it. And then not only does it actually technically help you get closer where you want to be, there is a mental win there that you're starting to take command of what you're doing. And that's what really resonated with me. That's beyond like the podcast. I mean, that's life lessons right there.
I think, you know, we were joking a little bit about it before about like the CrossFit sort of like mentality, right? And I think we've even talked about it in like in staff meetings, right? Like when you're in the suck of a workout or a row or a run, the only thing you can control is doing the next thing.
Yep.
Right. You can't control the pain, the anger, all the stuff, right? Which I feel all the time when I'm going through a workout, but I can take care of the next step forward. I can take care of the next pull. I can take care of the next squat.
You can take care of the next breath. Like what's the next breath?
Or the next breath. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I think the similarities between Jan and Mariah actually are much closer than I think you would think sort of at their core than you might think just sort of looking at the content superficially. So yeah, I think it's really interesting.
That would be a super pod, the workout versus the walking. We'll see how that goes. Yeah. We'll tease that out. That's going to get us to number 200. That being said, we'd like to thank you for listening, not just to satisfy our egos, but for also your championship of arts and culture and listening to the pod. Be sure to rate us 5 stars, share a positive review, get it out there because it really helps people find us. And if you have any suggestions, celebrations, or cries of shock or outrage, you can hit us at pod@imaginemke.org.
We are also on the socials, so you can get us on Twitter and Instagram @imagine_mke or on Facebook @imaginemke. Mention the pod on social media, your reactions, anything else, and we will make you an imaginary friend. And again, if you donate in the next 4 or 5 days before our deadline, I think it's 5 days now, we will make you a #realfriend. Because
I'll have you over for dinner if you're a $5,000 donor. I will make dinner for you.
I think we might actually be able to work out each member of our staff making dinner for you. That'll get us to 40,000. Thank you all so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.